form.
Yes, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here along with Michael Swede. Hopefully the Speak Free Radio feed is feeding the EFR audience. Okay, so that messes us up every once in a while. And if that's the case, okay, so brother, Cinco de Mayo. Today is the 5th of May. I wonder if the Jews approve of the 5th of May celebration by Mexicans every year. They don't approve of anything white, right? So hopefully we are simulcasting from Speak Free to EFR, and you're hearing the feed. If not, you'll have to go to Speak Free Radio and click it on there. So, but today we're going to Viva La Raza, the race, exactly. Yeah, it's okay for them to be proud of their race, but it's not okay for us to be proud of our race. And the Jew, okay, so, okay. You guys will have to go to SFR. Sorry. Okay. All right. But, monitor this chat room. Okay, I'll have to talk with Paul. All right. Well, I'll have to talk with Paul about this. The third or fourth time this has happened, and it shouldn't be happening. Speak Free Radio should be feeding the Eurofolk stream as well. All right. So, but we're going to continue with Facts Are Facts by Benjamin Friedman, who is probably the least guileful, the Jewish person with the least guile of any Jew who ever lived, right? That's assuming he was born Jewish. We've heard rumors that he was actually adopted. So how are you doing today, Michael?
Hello, Eli. I'm doing good. Hey. I'm doing good. It's starting getting summer here, so it's very much warmer now. So that's very nice. This winter was very long. It was very long, but now we're getting green outside and it's warm outside. So that's very nice.
Yeah. Is it warm enough in Sweden to take a dip in the ocean?
They are a bit chilly still, so not maybe not. You can take a dip if you want to, but it is chilly, I would say.
Yeah, very cold, huh? Right.
Yeah. It is. It is.
Yeah, yeah. And so so we'll be continuing with this fantastic, I can't sing the praises of this book, Facts Are Facts, by Benjamin Friedman enough. Every white Christian needs to read this book. Yeah. And yeah, so as I typed into the chat room, just go to Speak Free Radio and listen there. But you can stay in this chat room. There's another chat room at Speak Free Radio also, but I can't monitor both. Yeah. So anyway, we'll continue today. Okay, so let me just pick it up. Let me back up. We're on page 35. We're on page 35. And let's see.
And
okay, go ahead.
It started with former President Truman says he benefited by much sound reasoning.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I can read on if you want to.
Yeah, go ahead, pick it up there. Okay.
And his brand of good philosophy of life, which absorbs from the book that reads the most, that he reads the most. His recent term in office reflected his study of the Talmud.
Oh.
No one familiar with the Talmud will deny that. But does our former president, Truman, know that Jesus did not feel the way he feels about the Talmud? And I question you, wasn't his Jewish name Solomon? Was it Truman?
Truman. Oh, yes, right, yeah. Yeah, so, Harry Solomon Truman. Yeah, exactly. But is he talking about Truman or Joe Biden?
I don't know. Truman is it now, I think it is. But I guess Biden is the same.
Yeah, that's right.
The much good reasoning and the good philosophy of life in the Talmud were constantly and consistently denounced by Jesus in no uncertain terms. Former President Truman should refresh his memory by reading the New Testament passage where Jesus expresses himself on the question of the Pharisees and their Talmud. Will Mr. Truman state that, in his opinion, the Talmud was the sort of book from which Jesus drew the teachings which enable him to revolutionize the world on moral and religious subjects?
Mm-hmm. Revolutionize, right?
Yeah, so Harry Truman was a 33-degree Mason who had to have abandoned his last vestige of Christianity.
If he ever had any.
Probably not. Right? If he told him, then he was Jewish. He had never had it anyway.
Yeah.
At that level, satanic rituals are practiced. Truman said that reaching the rank was the greatest honor of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps also it is the sound reasoning of the Talmud that helped him unleash the atomic bomb on Japan and kill millions of people in ritual sacrifice to Lucifer, his god.
Right. Yeah.
So before leaving the Talmud as a subject, I would like to refer to the most authentic analysis of the Talmud, which has ever been written. You should obtain a copy of it and read it. You will amply rewarded for your trouble in finding a copy of it. I can doubtly assure you the name of the book is the Talmud. It was written almost a century ago in French by Arsène Darmstadter.
Arsène Darmstadter. Okay. Sorry.
Maybe we should do like this. In 1897, it was translated into English by the celebrated Henriette Slolst and published by the Jewish Publication Society of America in Philadelphia. Henriette Solst was an outstanding educator and Zionist, and one or the most notable and admirable so-called or Jews of this century. Henriette Solst
translated. She's a Jew. That's all we need to know. She's a Jew. Okay.
Translation of Arsène Darmstadter. I can't pronounce
Darmstadter.
It.
Darmstadter. Darmstadter. Accent on the first syllable. Darmstadter. Okay.
Darmstadter. The
go.
Talmud is a classic. You will never understand the Talmud until you have read it.
Okay.
I will quit from it springily. I will quote from it.
There you go.
Now, Judaism finds its expression in the Talmud, which is not a remote suggestion and a faint echo thereof, but in which it has become incarnate, in which it has taken form, passing from a state of abstraction into the domain of real things. The study of Judaism is that of the Talmud, as the study of the Talmud is that of Judaism. They are two inseparable things, or better, they are one and the same. Accordingly, the Talmud is the completest expression of religious movement, and this code of endless prescriptions and minute ceremonials represents in its perfection the total work of the religious idea. The miracle,
right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The miracle was accomplished by a book, the Talmud. The Talmud, in turn, is composed of two distinct parts, the Mishnah and the Gemara. The former, the text, the latter, the commentary upon text. By the term Mishnah was designated a collection of decisions and traditional laws, embracing all departments of legislation, civil and religious.
Okay, hold on. Look, I need to insert here. This is not concerning the Bible. This is concerning the rabbis who composed the Masoretic text upon which the King James Version is based, namely the distortion and redaction of the Old Testament Hebrew into a rabbinical concoction, probably the best term I could use, a rabbinical concoction which is not the Bible. And of course, quote doesn't reflect that. Okay, back to you.
Embracing all departments of legislation. Okay, I read that. This code, which was the work of several generations of rabbis. Yeah, this was the oral teachings that Jesus Christ, Yeshua, right, condemned.
Yeah. Fake.
Yeah, nothing indeed can equal the importance of the Talmud, unless it be the ignorance that prevails concerning it. This example, yeah, this explains how it happens that a single page of the Talmud contains three or four different languages, or rather, specimens of a language at three or four stages of degeneracy.
Okay. Is it the Talmud that's degenerate, or the languages that are degenerate?
I guess it's both parts, I would say.
Both, there you go. Yeah, both.
A Mishnah of five or six lines is accompanied by 50 or 60 pages of explanation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's law in all its authority. It constitutes dogma and cult. It is the fundamental element of the Talmud, the daily study of the Talmud, which among Jews began with the age of 10 to end life itself. Necessary was a severe gymnastic for the mind, thanks to which it acquired
subtlety.
When
it's all caps, it's harder to pronounce. Okay.
Yeah. It aspires to one thing, to establish for Judaism a corpus juris ecclesiastae. I have to change the place on my computer. Can you read on, okay, Eli? So I get the biggest screen.
Your text must be corrupted or something.
It's small. It's too small.
Right. Yeah, so corpus juris ecclesiastae means corruption. Corruption. It's anti-biblical Jewish rubbish is what the Talmud is. Okay, so let's continue. The above quotations were called. Cult. It constitutes dogma and cult. I'm surprised that the author uses the word cult. The above quotations were culled from a treatise intended to sugarcoat the Talmud. This is Benjamin Friedman talking now. In painting a nice word picture of the Talmud, the author could not escape mentioning the above facts also. Coming from this source under the circumstances, the facts stated above do not add glory to the Talmud. Nothing can add glory to the Talmud. It's a piece of Jewish filth from beginning to end. Quote, the Talmud unmasked, the secret rabbinical teaching concerning Christians, unquote, was written by Reverend I.B. Pronitis, master of theology and professor of the Hebrew language at the Imperial Ecclesiastical Academy of the Roman Catholic Church in Old St. Petersburg, Russia. Oh, okay. I thought he was an Orthodox Catholic, but he's a Roman Catholic. All right. The Reverend Pronitis was the greatest of the students of the Talmud. Now, the Talmud says any non-Jew who studies Talmud should be put to death. So I wonder how he met his demise. His complete command of the Hebrew language qualified him to analyze the Talmud as few men in history. Well, the same is true of Martin Luther. Martin Luther was able to read Hebrew, and when he came across the Talmud, he denounced it in no uncertain terms. The Reverend Pronitis scrutinized the Talmud for passages referring to Jesus, Christians, and the Christian faith. These passages were translated by him into Latin. Hebrew lends itself to translation into Latin better than it goes directly into English. The translation of the passages of the Talmud referring to Jesus, Christians, and Christian faith were printed in Latin by the Imperial Academy of Sciences in St. Petersburg in 1893 with the imprimatur of his archbishop. The translation from the Latin into English was made by great Latin scholars in the United States in 1939, was provided by wealthy Americans for that purpose. Okay, so they do not identify themselves because they don't want to be murdered. In order not to leave any loose ends on the subject of the Talmud's reference to Jesus, the Christians, and to the Christian faith, I will below summarize translations into English from the Latin text of Reverend Pronitis. Quote, the Talmud unmasked, the secret rabbinical teachings concerning Christians, unquote, which is the full title of the book. It would require too much space to quote these passages verbatim with their footnotes from the Sansino edition in English. The Sansino edition is the Talmud. First, I will summarize the references by Reverend Pronitis referring to Jesus in the Talmud in the original text, translated by him into Latin, from Latin into English. Okay, so then, oh, sorry. I scrolled down too far. So the next heading is blasphemous references to Jesus found in the Talmud. If you want to pick it up from there, you have a suitable text now?
Yeah, okay. Now it's better size for it. So okay, the first reference is Sanhedrin 67a. Jesus referred to as the son of Pandira, a soldier. Kala 1b, 18b, illegitimate and conceived during menstruation.
Which, of course, I don't think that's possible. No, he can't conceive during menstruation because the blood of the uterus is being washed out. So that's impossible. Okay.
Yeah. But I guess
I hate to contradict a rabbi.
Yeah, but I think everything the rabbi writes here is to contradict what the Bible say. Everything is contradiction to it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sanhedrin 67a, hanged on the eve of Passover, Tolva, Yeshu, birth related in most shameful expressions.
Mm-hmm.
Abhova,
Sarah. Oh, wait a minute. It says hanged. I missed that. Not crucified. Hanged. Although I suppose you can say he hung on a tree or hung on a cross. Okay, so it isn't exactly a lie. Okay, back to you.
Abhova, Sarah, second, referred to as the son of Pandira, a Roman soldier. Shabbat, 14. Again referred to as the son of Pandira, the Roman. Sanhedrin 43a. On the eve of Passover, they hanged Jesus. Shabbat 104b. Called a fool, and no one pays attention to fools. Told of Yeshu. Judas and Jesus engage in quarrel with filth. Sanhedrin 103a suggested corrupts his morals and dishonors self. Sanhedrin 107b seduced, corrupted, and destroyed Israel.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the Jews aren't Israel, so it doesn't matter what they think. All right, back to you.
Yeah. Sohar third, 282, die like a beast and buried in animals' dirt heap.
Okay, that happened to Judas. Okay.
Hilkoth Melachim attempted to prove Christians' error in worship of Jesus. Abhodha Sarah 21a, reference to worship of Jesus in homes unwanted. Orach Shaim 113, avoid appearance of paying respect to Jesus.
Now, this is interesting because how do crypto-Jews who pretend to be Christians, how do they avoid the appearance of paying respect to Jesus when they're associating with Christians? Well, I think you can probably go to the Jews for Jesus. And when they recite the name of Jesus, they're not talking about the same Jesus that Christians believe in. They're talking about some other Jesus, the one that, their Messiah that is yet to come. Okay, because they simply do not accept our Messiah, Yahshua. They simply do not accept him. So it's, they put on airs. They put on airs and deceive the Christians, and the Christians still don't get it.
Yeah, because they believe that everybody is like the Christians. Everybody is good-hearted, and whenever they lie, they never do anything wrong.
Right.
But Jews do that every time. They lie.
They love Jesus. Loves her mama and apple pie. Right. Do the Jews eat apple pie? I don't think so. All right. But
they like the sweet pie.
Yeah, right. Koladoth Yeshu is a track that is taught to Jewish children. All Jewish children who learn at a yeshiva, which is a Jewish school, which is most Jewish kids, they are taught from the Toledoth Yeshu, which calls Jesus all kinds of names and tells lies about us and our faith, etc., etc. So this is how Jewish children are brought up. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, there is no hope for them.
No.
Indoctrinated from childhood.
Little parasites running around in the playground.
Yeah, and they get worse and worse.
I've seen it with my own eyes.
You have?
Oh, yes.
They're not so common here in Sweden, but I have worked with one, and I know how they operate. They operate exactly as the Bible say. They stick your knife in the back all the time, and they lie and lie and lie and cheat.
Right. There are several exclusively Jewish neighborhoods in Chicago. I'm trying to think of the streets. Sacramento and I can't remember the intersection, but the whole community is filled with the synagogues and Jewish schools. So if you drive by the schools at the right time of day, you'll see all of the little boys with their locks hanging down to their knees, running around the playground, tripping over themselves, et cetera, et cetera. And, so it's very common in Chicago and big cities around the world, really, because that's where Jews congregate, the big cities. Since they don't farm, they don't know from farming. They detest farming, and they detest work, too. Their Talmud says work is – farming is the lowest of all occupations. Okay, back to you.
What was the place when I forgot this? This place, was it in Chicago? This Nazi had this parade in a Jewish quarter.
Skokie. Yeah, that's like an 80% Jewish suburb of Chicago.
Okay, that's one of the places, and then they work, then they go there doing a so-called Nazi march. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And he was a Jew too, I guess. He wanted to did it.
It was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and leading a bunch of Nazis who didn't know he was Jewish.
Yeah, so they get some that still is anti-Semite and Nazi under every bed.
Yeah, right. No, there's a Jew under every bed.
With at least
a microphone stuck there by a Jew.
Yeah, because they are not so many, so they have to have those microphones on our phones and everywhere so they can listen in, because they are very, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Those Jewish words here is kind of sometimes they are very what to say corrupt. Say to read them, right. They sound they are very corrupt when you read. So like Lor Dia 152. Do not appear to pay respect to Jesus by accident. Man, how did they do that?
Yeah, right. Well, if you do it by accident, how can you avoid appearing to do it by accident? It makes no sense, right?
No sense at all.
That's silly. Yeah, that's how silly the Talmud is. It's just a lot of silliness with a lot of, animus against Yahshua Messiah and Christians.
Yeah. So, Abhova Saram, 60. False teachings to worship on the first day of Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What?
That, well, because they consider the Sabbath the seventh day. So therefore, who worships on the first day is a heathen or a goy or a Christian or whatever other dirty word they can use towards us.
Yeah. But they don't use the dirty words when we are present, though.
No. Unless they don't realize you're there. Right. Okay.
So the above are a few selected from a very complicated arrangement in which many references are obscured by intricate reasoning. Yeah, they are obscured.
Mm-hmm, yeah. By the way, he used the word subtle, and that word subtle is used of Nakash in Genesis chapter 1, Genesis 3, verse 1. Okay, they're the children of Nakash, and they still have the Nakash sensitivity and subtlety and creepiness too. Okay.
Yeah. The following are a few summarized reference to Christians and the Christian faith, although not all is expressed in exactly that manner. There are 11 names used in the Talmud for non-Talmud followers, by which Christians are meant. Beside Nostrim, from Jesus the Nazareth, Christians are called by all of the names used in the Talmud to designate all non-Jews. Minim, Edom, they are Edom.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they call us what they are.
Yeah, that's they always do, anti-Semite. Mm-hmm. They are the biggest anti-Semites that exists.
Yeah, in professional psychology, that's called projection. You project onto others what you actually are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Abhodan Sarah, Akum, Obhede El Ilim, Nokrim.
Nokrim. Oh, that's interesting, because Nokri is a kind of a swear word in the Old Testament for non-Israelites. You know, those who cannot, associate with Israelites. Okay, so, but they mean that we can't associate with Jews. That's okay. I don't want to anyway. All right, back to you.
No, we shouldn't. Because then we have a much more.
No, yeah, actually, we're forbidden.
We keep away from them. We are forbidden to
be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. So why are Christians associating with Jews?
Yeah, because probably they have money, so they like the money. I don't know why they are so impressed by it, but they're superficial people are impressed by it.
Yeah. Yeah, when a Jew walks by, you hear the gold jingling in his pocket. Oh, let's follow him.
Yeah, look at him. Look, you can learn from him. Learn his way, yeah. And then so you get money. But no, right. That's not how we should operate.
Mm-hmm.
So, ame haretz, kutim, apik, o rosim, and goyim.
Yes, goyim is the main one.
Yeah, the other one is more, I don't hear them so often from them.
Right.
They call us, yeah. Now they also call us the Amalek also, don't they?
Right, they do.
Yeah, so that's maybe recent. A word.
That's a recent addition to the Talmud.
A recent addition to the Talmud.
Yeah, right. Volume 666.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The last one before they burn.
Yeah, so there you go.
Besides supplying the name by which Christians are called in the Talmud, the passages quoted below indicate what kind of people the Talmud pictures the Christians to be and what the Talmud says about the religious worship of Christians.
Right. All right, now there's a pretty long list that follows here. This is, oh man, this is over 2 pages long. So, and it's, you know, we'll refer the reader to, you know, this list. But here, let's just jump through these. We'll just go randomly. But I'll start with the first one, and then you pick one, and we'll just go down the list until we get to the end. Hilkoth Ma'akaloth, Christians are idolaters, must not associate. Well, Paul says we're not supposed to associate with unbelievers, so the feeling is mutual, isn't it? Okay. Go ahead and pick one. Let's do this. Let's scroll down 5. We'll take every 5th one. Doesn't matter if you're exactly on point with 5. Could be 4, 6, 9 million. All right.
Urash Kaim, 22. 20 and 2. Christians disguise themselves to kill Jews.
Oh, it's the other way around, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah.
Your idea, 198:48. Clean female Jews contaminated by meeting Christians. Oh, that's why Jewish women avoid meeting with Christians. That's a good reason. Okay.
It's so silly.
Hoodies. Yeah, I don't know if you had that in grade schools in Sweden. The school kids here in America pick on certain children who have cooties. You don't want to touch those with cooties, right?
What is that?
COOTIES, some kind of plague.
Uh-huh.
So you don't want to touch that kid, right? So the Jews do the same thing, but toward us Christians. We, according to Jews, we all have cooties, not to be touched. We're the untouchables, in a bad sense, of course.
Yeah. Urach Kaim, 57, 6a. Christians to be pitied more than sick pigs.
Oink, oink. Ketuboth. 3b, the seed of a Christian is valued as the seed of a beast. Oh, some value to that.
Emek Hash Hanach 17a, non-new souls come from death and death shadow.
No, it sounds like Hinduism. Abodah Zarah 14bt, forbidden to sell religious works to Christians. Now, I'd have to say ahem here. Do you think that would stop Jews from selling stuff to Christians?
No, right? No.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Okay.
No, they won't make a deal.
You know what? When I was with the National Knights, I asked the Imperial Wizard, you know, where do you guys buy your robes and all the clan paraphernalia? And he says, oh, well, there's a shop run by a Jew. There's a shop run by a Jew in, I'm trying to remember the suburb of the Notre Dame Notre Dame school is. South Bend, Indiana. There's a suburb of South Bend, Indiana, where this Jew actually owns a shop that sells Klan paraphernalia. Okay, they will profit from anything. Back to you. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, anything. Mm-hmm. So that is silly.
Including rope. Yeah.
Ropes too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Nobody else will carry it. You know, white people are afraid to carry that kind of material. The Jews will shut them down. But if a Jew sells it, it's kosher.
Yeah, because they make money.
Mm-hmm.
Hilkoth av Sar, 10b. Jews must not resell broken calices to Christians.
Calices. So wait, what's wrong with that? Broken chalices? Well, they can use crazy glue and put them back together, right? That just shows how silly this stuff is, right? Oh, Sanhedrin 58b. To strike a Jew is like slapping the face of God.
Yeah, and I see that. Yeah, and it's the word Jew because they use the word Israelite, but they're not Israelites.
Yeah, right. That's right.
So, Abhova Sarah 72b, wine touched by Christians must be thrown away.
Mm. Okay. No, they never do that. Where Judaism is concerned, rules are made to be broken. Okay. About a Zara 78C, festivals of followers of Jesus regarded as idolatry. Well, which means, well, we practice the real Passover, not Easter. And we practice the feast days, not Catholic holidays or Jewish holidays, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, never the twain shall meet. The reality is that true Christianity and Judaism have nothing in common. Absolutely nothing. All right, back to you.
Iwaran Vea, 148.5. If Christians is not devout, may send him gifts. What?
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
yeah. Devout? Devout toward what? I get it. Yeah. If the Christian is a half-hearted Christian, then the Jew may send him gifts in order to make him a fully apostate Christian to try to convert him to. Well, in any case, they want to convert us to Judaism, whether we're whether we're part of the tribe or not. They want us to believe that the Jews are God's chosen, and they want us to think like Jews, which most Christians do. They think like Jews. Okay. All right, so let's see. Oh, I like this one. The Oradea, 155, 1. Avoid Christian doctors not well known to neighbors. Well, today that's probably a good advice because whether Christian or Jewish, they're feeding you poison and they're not going to help your health in any case, Christian or Jewish these days.
Iordea 148.12h. Hide hatred for Christians at their celebrations.
Okay, yeah, right. Well, we must be hypocrites. Okay. Hilkoth Akum 5.12 quotes scriptures to forbid mention of Christian God. Well, those that can't be in the Bible. Because the Christian God is Yahweh and his son Yeshua. So, but if you mention either, well, their literature forbids Yahweh and Yeshua. So they hate either name. Okay, back to you.
Yeah, they do. And look what they have done in our schools. We are not allowed to have the Bible in the school. We are not allowed to have prayers in the school anymore. So,
right?
That's how they have forbid mention of of Yahshua Messiah, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Now, we have this thing called 501c3, which is a tax-exempt corporation status that many, if not all, major denominations in America adhere to. And that means that they can't really criticize the Jews or homosexuals or anything that's evil. Okay. They must abide by the IRS regulations that you must favor the, what do you call it? The persecuted minorities. Okay. The minority du jour that they always come up with new ones, you know, like, I identify as a Jew. If I identify as a Jew, would I get persecution status automatically? Right. Okay. Yeah. But no, they won't. They know me too well. They'll never accept me as a persecuted Jew. All right. Yeah. Oh, but I forget where we're at, but I like this one here. Avoda Zara 54a. Usury may be practiced upon Christians or apostates. Okay.
Yeah, but they use usury on their fellow tribesmen too. So that is not really true.
That's true, of course. Well, a fellow Jew could be an apostate.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Babha Bafra 54b. Christians' property belongs to first person claiming.
Right. But the whole rest of the world practices that, right? Just shows that Jews are just like everybody else except Christians, okay? Now, I don't see that. Well, I'll just jump down here. Zohar 1:160a. Jews must always try to deceive Christians. There you go.
Baba, 113. Name of God, not profaned when lying to Christians.
Oh, okay. So if you lie to a Christian in the name of, but they don't use the name Yahweh. They just spell it G-D, and therefore they don't use the name of God in any case. So, but when you lie to a Christian, that's good with him, right? That's okay with their God, which we know is Lucifer, not Yahweh. Okay, Kaboth Haggai 6D, Jews may swear falsely by use of subterfuge wording. Yeah. Okay.
Hilk Hoth Akum, baptized Jews are to be put to death.
Ooh. Okay, well, that's fine with me. All right. Okay. Zohar 1:25a, Christians are to be destroyed as idolaters, and they're doing a good job of it today.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lalkut Simoni 245c, shedding blood of impious offers sacrifice to God.
Of the impious. Impious. Now that could be a Jew too.
If he doesn't pay homage.
Yeah, right, right. But Avoda Zara 26b T, even the best of the Goyim should be killed. That's what they're doing in Gaza, folks. Okay.
Okay.
We're getting close to the end.
Hilkof Akum. Either turn them away from their idols or kill.
Okay, so does a Jew bother turning a Christian away from their idols? Let's say the idol, the Christian is a Catholic, and he's got a plastic crucifix, right? Is any Jew going to bother trying to argue against the Catholic to say, you shouldn't have that crucifix on your mantle? What's wrong with you? They're going to have to kill them, right?
I think you keep them there instead.
Yeah. The Christians should kick the Jew out is what should happen, right? Okay. All right. I'll take the last one here. Kabbat 118a. Prayers to save from punishment of coming Messiah. Okay. So in other words, Now, who is this directed at? Is this directed at Christians? They don't want Christians to be saved. But we're talking about their Messiah, not the second coming of our Messiah. Okay? And this is how Christians get fooled. When they join Jews for Jesus, they falsely believe that those Jews actually believe in our Jesus. No, they're talking about their Jesus who is yet to come. That's why they want to build a third temple, and that's why they want to slaughter that red heifer. Okay? All right, so let me pick it up from here, and we're 10 minutes away from the top of the hour. So in the Library of Congress and the New York Public Library, unless recently removed, you can find a copy of the Talmud Unmasked, The Secret Rabbinical Teaching Concerning Christians by the Reverend I.B. Pranitis, a copy of the original work printed by St. Petersburg in St. Petersburg, Russia, in 1892, can be made available to you by our mutual friend. Well, of course, this is part of the original document here. I do have a print copy of the book, and it should be available online. So let me check that out. Let me turn it back over to you, Michael, because I have to cue up the music for our coming break. But let me just finish this paragraph and the editorial comment. And okay. That book should be, I'll try to find a copy of that online. It should be one free. And it's a very, very good book. And the editor says, for a more recent comprehensive expose on the religion of Judaism, we suggest reading Judaism Discovered, a study of the anti-biblical religion of racism, self-worship, superstition, and deceit by Michael Hoffman, editor. And Michael Hoffman is a Catholic, and he promotes Catholicism in all his writings as well. So beware. Okay. Back to you, Michael.
Thank you. So, the National Conference of Christians and Jews need not scrutinize the 63 books of the Talmud to discover all the anti-Christ and anti-Christian and anti-Christian faith passages in the books, which are the legal code which forms the basis of Jewish religious law and which is the text book used in the training of rabbis. They can also keep that, as Rabbi Morris Kircher also points out, as explained earlier, that adults study ancient writings too, in group discussions of Talmud before evening prayer. If the National Conference of Christians and Jews are genuinely interested in interfaith and brotherhood, do you not think, my dear Dr. Goldstein, that they should compel a start at once to expunge from the Talmud the anti-Christ, anti-Christian, and anti-Christianity passages from the Talmud in the broader way they expunge passages from the New Testament? Will you ask them? Throughout the world, the Oxford English Dictionary is accepted as the most authoritative and authentic source for information on the origin, definition, and use of words in English language. Mm-hmm. Authorities in all fields, everywhere, except the Oxford English Dictionary, brings out clearly that Judaist and Judaic are the correct forms for the improper and incorrect misused and misleading Jews and Jewish. You will agree completely with Oxford English Dictionary if you consider the matter carefully. Judaist and Judaic are correct. Jews and Jewish are incorrect. Jew and Jewish do not belong in the English language if the Jews, the correct word is, of interest of the English-speaking peoples.
Yes. Well, okay. So we have to unlearn the false language that the Jews have put into our Bibles, okay? And Jew is one of them, and so is Gentile. And so we're all about using the correct words. But Judaic, Pharisaic, if somebody calls me an anti-Semite, I say, I'm not an anti-Semite, I'm an anti-Pharisaic or an anti-Pharisee. Okay. Because that was Judaism really is. It's Pharisaism. It has nothing to do with Moses or the Old Testament. All right. Okay. Back to you.
The Jews cannot truthfully describe themselves as Jews because they are not in any sense Judeans. They can correctly identify themselves by their religious belief, if they so wish, by identifying themselves as Judaist. A Judaist is a person who professes so-called Judaism as his religious belief. According to the Oxford English Dictionary, the origin of Jew has not its roots in Judaism, as explained. The adjective from a Judaist is Judaic, Jewish, as the adjective is just as incorrect as Jew is as a noun. Jewish has no reason to exist.
Well, okay. Nevertheless, the word Jew is contained in the translations of the Old Testament quite frequently, okay? But that is always a mistranslation of the word Judah or Yehud and Yehudim, which is Judahites, proper translation, okay? But the reason the Jews have done that, and you know, since the Jews are known so commonly as Jews, there's no way we're going to be able to change everybody's mind and have them use these two different terms, which what he's saying is correct. Okay. A Jew is a Judaist. He follows the religion called Judaism, but the word Judaism is not in the Bible either. Okay. You will not find that word in the Bible because the Jewish religion began with the Pharisees. And as the, I don't know if he quoted above in the Talmudic quotes, or other quotes by Jews, that Talmudism is Pharisaism, okay? But even the Jewish people don't know that. It's only the rabbis, and the Jewish people simply follow what the rabbis tell them to do, and most of it is ritual nonsense. The Jews know very little about the Bible. In that sense, they're very much like Judeo-Christians, who also know very little about the Bible, right? They don't study the Bible, they just believe what they're a pulpit master tells them. All right. Okay, so go ahead and finish this paragraph, and we'll take a quick break.
I have a new heading now that starts, so...
Oh, okay. Well, so let's take a break here. We'll finish just finish that section, and we'll get into the innuendos attached to the word Jewish, okay? And as I just said, it's an impossible task to change people's use of words and go from Jew to Judaic. You know, it's just not going to happen. And so, and the Jews, that's what they call themselves. So if they want to call themselves Jews, go for it. You know, we know who they are and what they are. It's just the rest of the world doesn't understand who they are and what they are. Okay, so folks, let's take a quick break. And we'll come back right after the music is done playing. And since the Jews despise the true name, let's call upon the name.
See the mistakes you have made on the way. Father can change them. And all the wounds you sustained here today, Father can heal them. The darkness of a deep despair-filled ocean can overwhelm the strongest of souls, and the tide rolls. See all the mountains there in your path. Father can move. That have kindled
All right, welcome back, everybody. That was Jonathan David Brown, Call Upon the Name. And I think his music is still available online. Just type in Jonathan David Brown. And by the way, a lot of Jews bought his music. I don't think they realized he was Christian identity. He was brought up in the Christian identity faith. And that's why his songs are loaded with Christian identity ideas. Okay. But nevertheless, the Jews didn't realize, and so they purchased his music as well. So good stuff, really good stuff. And I think he had 3 or 4 albums out. I haven't checked out. He's right here. Well, not far from Harrison in Ozark, but he's passed away. He used to live in Ozark, Missouri. So anyway, our show today is sponsored by Money Tree Publishing. And I'll just read off a couple of the items here. Synagogue of Satan. Siege is a new one, the official anthology. Haven't got the description of that book yet. And The 6 Million Factor Fiction by Peter Winter. Europa, The Last Battle. There's going to be one more battle, folks, and it's for the world. It's between us and them in black and white by a black man and David Gehary talking about the Jewish question. The Myth of German Villainy. That sounds really good. And a whole bunch of good stuff. Henry Ford, The International Jew, Volumes 1 and 2, The War Against Whites, etc. So you can peruse that going to Money Tree Publishing. Of course, my book, The Great Impersonation, available there as well. All right, so let's get back to it. And let's see, facts are facts. Let me pick it up here in the new section. Okay, Michael?
Yes, go for it.
Yeah, all right. So hold on. We're almost to the end of this document, so we're definitely going to finish it today, and we're going to pick it up with Elizabeth Dilling's book on what's the new title? It used to be called The Plot Against Christianity, but they've retitled it, so you can search for it by either name though. So, but we'll get to that shortly. Okay.
Is the Jewish religion its influence today?
The Jewish religion, its influence today. Okay. So we'll get to, we're going to finish this today. So we'll pick up with Elizabeth Dilling after this. Okay. Innuendos attached to the word Jewish. Well-planned and well-financed publicity by so-called or self-styled Jews in the English-speaking countries in the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries created a wide acceptance and use for the word Jewish. Jewish is being used today in many ways that are no less fantastic and grotesque than incorrect and inaccurate. Jewish is used today to describe everything from Jewish blood, whatever that may be. Well, it's mixed blood, that's for sure, to Jewish rye bread, maybe some kosher rabbi pronounced a spell upon that rye bread. Strange as that may sound, the many implications, well, we Germans invented rye bread, right, not Jews. The many implications, inferences, and innuendos of Jewish today resulting from its commercial uses beggar description. Well, again, that's so commonly accepted by the entire world. There's really no point in trying to contradict it anymore. But let's continue. At the 1954 annual meeting of the St. Paul Guild in the Plaza Hotel in New York City before more than 1,000 Catholics, a Roman Catholic priest who was the main speaker and the guest of honor referred to my Jewish blood. Oh, no. It just happens that this priest was born of so-called Jews in Eastern Europe and was converted to Catholicism there about 25 years ago, or so he says. It seems unique that a priest who has professed Catholicism that length of time should mention my Jewish blood to Catholics. The radio blasts and the outdoor signs blazon Levy's Jewish rye bread in the same city at the same time. Between these two extremes, why don't we have Catholic rye bread? Between these two extremes are countless other products and other services which advertise themselves in print, on radio and television as Jewish. This priest who talks to Catholics about, quote, my Jewish blood, unquote, when he addresses audiences also refers to the Jewish blood of Mary. Oh, here we go. Yeah, well, that's why. That's why all these false priests, because they want to equate the early Christians with Jews, which is, of course, a lie, which refers to the Jewish blood of Mary, Holy Mother of Jesus, to the Jewish blood of the apostles, and the Jewish blood of the early Christians, all of which is a lie. What he means by my Jewish blood mystifies those Catholics who hear him. They query, what is Jewish blood? They ask what happens to Jewish blood when so-called or self-styled Jews are converted to Catholicism. Well, it stays just as polluted as it was in the first place. And in the extreme case, when a so-called or self-styled Jew becomes a Roman Catholic priest, how is Jewish blood biologically different from the blood of persons who profess other religious faiths, they ask. It is hard for me to believe that there is anything biologically different which determines characteristics typical of specific religious belief. Well, Jews have the blood of Satan flowing in their veins. Are the inherent racial and national characteristics determined by religious dogmas or doctrine? No, you can't convert it to being an Israelite. You have to have Israelite blood. Okay, of course, Benjamin Friedman is not Christian identity, so he might not agree with us there, but that is in fact the case. Jews, the blood of a Jew is different. It has the blood of Lucifer, that is Nachash, flowing in their veins through the Kenites in Genesis chapter 4, the Canaanites, the Edomites, and the Pharisees, and those who call themselves Jews who are Edomites. And then, of course, they convert. They had mass conversion of Khazars to Judaism. So they have a particular type of blood, which is very, very mixed. Very, very mixed. And not the blood of the Judahites, which has to be one specific tribe and with no admixture of any other blood, as the Bible clearly states. Okay. So Jewish blood is very, very mixed. You can say that much very strongly. Okay. The word Jewess raises a similar question. If Jewess is the female for the male Jew, I must admit that I have been unable to find female as well as male designation for persons professing any religious belief other than so-called Judaism. Well, of course, it's both a group or a breed, okay, a mixed breed, and not a pure race. And most of that mixed breed practices religion called Judaism. Are there any others that you know? I mean, the confusion between the religion and the race occurs nowhere else except among Jews. So, you know, Catholics admit that they preach to all races, right? And they have no regard for race in that sense. But neither do the Jews, because anybody can convert to Judaism for a price, right? You pay enough shekels, they'll call you a Jew, all right? I have searched for the female of Catholicism, Protestantism, and others, but without success. It seems very popular now to refer to Mary, Holy Mother of Jesus, as a Jewess. It does seem unrealistic to identify the sex of members of any religious belief by appropriate designations. If the word Jew is regarded as descriptive of a race or nation, as is often the case, it is equally unrealistic to indicate the sex of members of a race or a nation by a suffix used for that purpose. I know of no case in that respect except Negress, and the Negro race strongly objects to the use of that designation, and strongly, well, it doesn't really matter. The fact is, a Jew can be of any race, and every Jew is of mixed race, which is not true of any of the 12 tribes of Israel. To be an Israelite, you have to be a direct descendant of an Israelite patriarch who marries a white woman. And that's the only way an Israelite can come into the world. And the Jews are definitely not that. Okay. All right. Next heading, the term Judeo-Christian is an oxymoron. I like that. Over to you.
And yet, another deception promoted by Jews.
Yes.
Another word is creating more problems among Christians. I refer to Judeo-Christian. You see, it's more and more day by day. Based on our present knowledge of history and on good sense applied to theology, and term Judeo-Christian presents a strange combination. Thus, Judeo refers to ancient Phariseeism, or to Talmudism, or to so-called Judaism. In view of what we know today, how can there be Judeo-Christian anything? Based upon what is not known, Judeo-Christians is unrealistic, as it would be to say anything is hot, cold, or old, young, or heavy, light, or that a person was healthy, sick, or poor, rich, or dumb, smart, or ignorant, educated, or happy, sad. These words are antonyms, not synonyms. Judeo-Christians, in the light of incontestable facts, are also anonymous, not synonyms, as so-called Jews would like Christians to believe more stand for Christianize. An Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies has been established by Seton Hall University. It is actually a one-man institute. Father John M. Ostenreicher.
Ostenreicher. Ostenreicher of Deutsch means Austrian. Father Austrian.
Okay.
As translated. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Is the one-man institute. The Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies occupies a small office in a downtown office building in Newark, NJ.
In the basement.
This one-man institute, according to their literature, has not faculty except Father Ostenreicher and no students. Father Ostenreicher was born as a Jew and became a convert to Catholicism.
I don't believe that. I believe he was born a Jew, but I don't believe he became a convert. Okay.
No, not really. I have the pleasure of hearing him talk on many occasions. Addresses by Father Ostenreicher and literature by mail are the principal activities of the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies. Father Ostenreicher also plans to publish books and circulate them through the world in large quantities.
Yeah, how Father, did he do that all by himself?
You ought to know. I mean, you ought to know because you have your book and it's not that easy.
Well, that's right. To distribute it all over the world. That's tough.
Yeah. Father Ostenreicher leaves no stones unturned to convince Catholics that Judeo-Christians is a combination of two words that are synonyms theologically. Nothing could be further from the truth. Father Ostenreicher impresses that viewpoint upon his Catholic audience. Father Osterreicher talks to Catholic audience only, so far as I am able to tell. In his addresses, Father Osterreicher impresses upon Catholics the opinion he personally holds on the question of the dependence of the Christian faith upon so-called Judaism. His audience depart Father Osterreicher's addresses very much confused.
Yeah, I'll bet. Okay, well, I mean, that happens to go to any Judeo-Christian denomination, right? You're going to come out confused. How do the people who murdered Jesus try to convert us to their religion? Why should we do that? Okay, back to you.
Exactly. Why should you do that? Someone that murdered your Messiah, why should you try to convert them?
Yeah. I mean, if he's a Jew, why'd they kill him? And why do you follow people who killed him? Right?
Yeah. Because people are pretty ignorant. They don't know it. They, I would say.
In fact, it's funny. When I was April 8th for the eclipse, I went to a concert the night before, and it was a folk music concert where a guy wrote a song about how the Jews killed Jesus, so Hitler killed the Jews. And I never thought I'd hear that in a song. But I said, yeah, well, I mean, the one Messiah is worth at least 6 million Jews, right? And many more. Okay, back to you.
It would make better Catholics out of Father Osterreicher's audience if he would sell Jesus and the Catholic Church rather than try to sell so-called Judaism to his audience.
There you go.
Well-planned and well-financed publicity by Jews managed to keep Christians well-informed on the subject of so-called Judaism. If Father Osterreicher would concentrate upon selling Jesus and the Christian faith to audience of Jews, he would be doing more towards realizing the objectives of Christian effort.
Right.
The activities of this one-man institute are somewhat of a deep mystery, but I am certain that
Monsignor
McNulty will never allow the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies to bring discredit upon the fine record of Seton Hall as one of the foremost Catholic universities anywhere.
Oh,
but
okay.
It will bear watching, and Monsignor McCulty will always appreciate constructive comments.
Okay, I didn't realize Seton Hall was a Catholic university, and Catholic universities, for some reason, they always have good basketball teams, and there's no Jews. I bet there's a few Judeo-Christians on those basketball teams. But they have, what's the Catholic secret society? Jesuits. If the Catholic university is a Jesuit university, then their basketball teams are named after devils. Okay, so like the Duke Blue Demons, and the Loyola Blue Devil? No, Blue Devils, Blue Demons. It's one or the other. Okay. Remember, for some reason, the Jesuits like to name their basketball teams after devils. Strange, isn't it? All right, back to you.
Yes, so the term anti-Semitism and anti-Semite used to smear anyone who opposes Jewish objectives. Oh, we know about that. I know that also.
Okay.
The word anti-Semitism is another word which should be eliminated from the English language. Anti-Semitism serves only one purpose today. It is used as a smear word. When Jews feel that anyone opposes any of their objectives, they discredit their victims by applying the word anti-Semite or anti-Semitic throughout all channels they have at their command and under their control, speak with great authority on that subject, because so-called or self-styled Jews were unable to disprove my public statement in 1946 in regard to the situation in Palestine. They spent millions of dollars to smear me as an anti-Semite, hoping thereby to discredit me in the eyes of the public, who were very much interested in what I had to say. Until 1946, I was a little saint to all Jews. When I disagreed with them, publicity on the Zionist intention in Palestine, I became suddenly anti-Semite number one. Is this what Benjamin Friedman is saying? That he is okay. Anti-Semite, but if he is an anti-Semite, then I guess because don't they call the Jews that go against the Jewish interest more a self-hating Jew?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe he is a convert. Maybe he was adopted by Jewish parents. Maybe, maybe he's just disguising himself here. But it doesn't matter who you are. They will call you an anti-Semite if you don't like Jews.
Or their plans.
Yeah, that's right.
It is disgracefully to watch the Christian clergy take up the use of word anti-Semitism. They should know better. They know that anti-Semitism is a meaningless word in the sense it is used today. They know
right.
The correct word is, what is this? Judeophobia.
Judeophobe, right, yeah. Or anti-Pharisaic.
Yeah.
Or anti-Judaic, as he pointed out earlier. Anti-Judaic. Now, you can oppose their religion without saying a Jew is scum of the earth, right? Which they are, because they're the children of the devil. Yahshua himself said so.
Yep, then it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-Semite was developed into the smear word it is today because Semite is associated with Jesus in the minds of Christians. Christians are accessories in the destruction of the Christian faith by tolerating the Jews of the smear word anti-Semitic to Zionist Christians who oppose the evil conspirators.
You got that right. Okay. Well, let me pick it up from the next heading here. The sabotage of Christian moral standards by Jews and their Shabbos Goy frontmen. Now, this is where the vast majority of Judeo-Christians, even though it is an oxymoron, the vast majority of Christians consider themselves to be, quote-unquote, Judeo-Christians, not realizing that the two religions are totally antagonistic toward one another and can never be blended together except in the mind. And any Christian who considers itself a Judeo-Christian has been deluded, as per Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. So let me repeat this heading here. The sabotage of Christian moral standards by Jews and their Shabbos Goy frontmen. It no doubt grieves you as much as it grieves me, my dear Dr. Goldstein, to see our nation's moral standards sink to new all-time lows day by day, which is exactly what Henry Ford said of Judaism. They debase our morals. Of that, there is very little doubt. The moral standards of this nation in political, economic, and social and spiritual fields are the factors which determine the position we will occupy in world affairs. And we have sunk very low in world affairs. We will be judged on that basis from afar by the other 94% of the world's total population, but they're just as clueless as we are. Our 6% of the world's total population will succeed or fall in its efforts to retain world leadership. I think he's referring to America, by our moral standards, because in the last analysis, they influence the attitudes and activities of the nation. They sure do that. The moral standards are the crucible in which the nation's character is refined and molded. The end product will never be any better than the ingredients used. Garbage in, garbage out. it is something to think about. There is much for which this Christian country can still feel very proud. This is 1950s, of course, ladies and gentlemen. But there is also much for which we cannot feel proud. A correct diagnosis of our nation's rapidly deteriorating moral standards in all walks of life will reveal the cause as the nation's current psychosis to concentrate primarily on how to, one, make more money, and two, have more fun. Well, what else there is in life, Michael? Is there anything? Wine, women, and song. Oh, I forgot about money and fun.
It's a lot more important stuff than those stuff.
Yeah, that, very
that's
good.
That's only superficial. That is just superficial.
Yeah. Superficial living. Superficial living. Okay. How many persons do you personally know who include among their daily duty service and sacrifice in the defense against his enemies of that priceless birthright, which is the God-given heritage of all those blessed to be born Americans? What services? What sacrifice? Well, we fought in Jew wars to preserve Judaism. That's what we've done. With very few exceptions, this generation, there's an asterisk here, I'll read it later, seems to regard everything as secondary to our accountability to unborn generations for our generation's breach of the faith and betrayal of our trust to posterity. The sabotage of our nation's moral standards is more incidental to the program of that inimical conspiracy than accidental in the continued march of mankind towards an easier existence. Yeah, we must have ease. The pursuit of ease. I want a nice, cozy, soft recliner to die in. The guided, and everybody knows, I mean, anybody who has studied human history, and although this may not be true of blacks, that unless you face challenges and exercise your body in pursuit of those challenges, you tend to die. You tend to get sluggish and poor and vain in your entire lifestyle. But that's true for people who pursue money for its own sake as well, okay? So, but blacks don't put much don't put forth much effort in any case. So, but that's why they deteriorate a lot faster than other races. Okay, the guidance and control of this nation's place in history has gravitated by default into the hands of those persons least worthy of that trusteeship. This notable achievement by them is their reward for the success in obtaining effective and numerous Christian male prostitutes to front for them. Too many of these efficacious Christian male prostitutes, I think he's talking about what we call pulpit bastards, are scattered throughout the nation in public affairs for the security of the Christian faith and the nation's political, social, and economic stability. Yeah, the stability of the Jewish economy. All right, here's the asterisk. Friedman's wording is rather strange, where he says, with very few exceptions, this generation seems to regard everything as secondary to our accountability to unborn generations. Yeah, I was puzzled by that, too. But the typical Christian belief and American belief has always been, and I think this is true of most races, that you are accountable to future generations. Okay, that's why you preserve your heritage rather than throwing it away, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that must be what he means, okay? So
yeah,
he may have meant that. Yeah, go ahead.
And yet the comment is that that's, I guess, is why you and me doing this, is if we care about the one that comes after us. That's why we're doing this.
That's right. That's right. We're trying to wake them up so they don't make the same mistakes that their parents have made, right? But the interesting thing is that the generation, what do they call it now? Generation
Z?
Or zero?
Z.
Yeah. Zero. Generation zero. Which means, who are they? What are we? We don't know. We're zombies. Maybe that's what the Z stands for. The zombie generation. And they don't care about anything.
No, they don't.
That's
they are.
Yeah.
That, but by design, they're, what is the word? I can't pronounce the word. Apatiska.
Apostasy, right.
Apostasy.
Well, that goes for Christians. Oh, well, and then you have apocalypse, where the world is going through an apocalypse right now, but they don't care. right?
No, right, just give me fun.
Yeah, just give me fun.
I want to travel. I want to do that. I want to experience myself. You know, I want to realize myself. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah. Girls just want to have fun. So, where were we? Oh, yeah, let me finish the editorial comment here. He may have meant that accountability for breach of faith and betrayal has become secondary to the pursuit of an easier existence. Yes, yes. Couch potatoes. Couch potatoes rise and fight. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's a contradiction in terms, isn't it? Okay. All right.
Yeah, it is.
So, where were we? The couch potato nation. Okay. Okay. He emphasizes this sentence here. Well, let me back up. The sabotage of our nation's moral standards is more incidental to the program of that inimical conspiracy. No. That's a dirty word, Benjamin. You're not supposed to use the word conspiracy. Than an accidental in the continued march of mankind towards an easier existence. Yeah, it is a conspiracy for sure. The guidance and control of this nation's place in history has gravitated by default into the hands of those persons least worthy of that trusteeship. And that's predicted in the Bible. We will have the leaders of the lowest sort, like Joe Biden. This notable achievement by them is their reward for their success in obtaining effective and numerous Christian male prostitutes to front for them. Excuse me. Too many of these efficacious Christian male prostitutes, like John Hagee, are scattered throughout the nation in public affairs for the security of the Christian faith, so-called Christian faith, and the nation's political, social, and Jewish political, social, and economic stability. A male prostitute is a male who, there's even more female prostitutes. He's talking about those people on television that broadcast Jewish edited news. Okay. A prostitute or a male prostitute is a male who offers the faculties of his anatomy from the neck up to anyone who will pay his asking price exactly as the female of the same species of the facilities of her anatomy from the neck down to anyone who will pay her asking price. Now, this is no longer true because both the male and female prostitutes have sold their whole bodies from head to toe to the international Jew. Thousands of these pseudo-Christian male prostitutes circulate freely unrecognized in all walks of life, proudly pandering, pernicious propaganda, or like that. This is alliteration in the extreme. Alliteration is when you have several words beginning with the same letter. Proudly pandering pernicious propaganda for pecuniary profit and political power. Let me try that again. This is superb alliteration, folks. Proudly pandering pernicious propaganda, pecuniary profit, and political power. They are the dog in the manger. I like that expression. I've never heard that before. The corroding effect of their subtle intrigue is slowly but surely disintegrating the moral fiber of the nation. You can say that again. This danger to the Christian faith cannot be overestimated. This peril to the nation should not be underestimated. The Christian clergy must remain alerted to it, and they are not. That's the problem. Okay, one more heading, I think, here, Michael. Go for it. The Zionist conspiracy.
The Zionist conspiracy gains support from prostitute clergy and duplicitous Christians. The international crime of crimes of all history, that reprehensible in which this nation played the main role, was committed in Palestine almost today as a result of the interference of the United States in that situation on behalf solely of the Zionist Worldwide Organization with its headquarters in New York.
Yeah. Now, again, it bears repeating. If the Jews' true home is Palestine, why don't they go there? I mean, what, it's probably less than 10% of Jews actually live in Palestine. The rest live in the big cities of the world, and they're going to stay there. They're not going to leave because parasites must live among a host, and the host is in the big cities of the world. That's where all the money is, right? That's where all the Shabbos goys are, which they need. They need Shabbos goys as front men for their propaganda, which is what he was saying in the previous paragraph. All right, back to you.
The interference of the United States in that situation on behalf of the aggressors illustrates the power exerted upon the domestic and foreign policies of this government by the male prostitutes fearlessly functioning on behalf of the Zionist conspirators. It is the blackest page in our history.
Okay, let me interject here because I grew up in the 1950s. And I remember very much the local news and even national news always featured male announcers. Female announcers was not yet in vogue. Okay. Fahey Flynn, was the ABC local news announcer. I remember him very, because that's an unforgettable name. Fahey Flynn, the Irish announcer for ABC News in Chicago. And, oh, who was the weatherman? Oh, the weatherman became very, very famous. The weatherman actually founded the Weather Channel. He was also on local television in Chicago, and he founded the Weather Channel, and he was also obviously a male announcer. So in this era, going into the 60s, with the sexual revolution, only in the mid-60s, I would say, was it fashionable to have female announcers, you know, come on television reporting the news. Okay, so that's why he's focusing on male prostitutes here. Back to you.
The responsibility for that unchristian, non-Christian, and anti-Christian cause can be honestly deposited on the doorstep of the Christian clergy. They must assume the full guilt for that inhumane and unholy crime committed in the name of Christian charity.
Send your money to Israel. Make sure those Jews can kill more Palestinians and make more wars.
Sunday after Sunday, year in and year out, the Christian clergy dined into the ears of 150 million Christians who go to church regularly that Christians must regard it as their Christian duty to support the Zionist conspiracy for the conquest of Palestine. Well, we sowed a wind. Now we will reap a whirlwind.
That's right. We're reaping a whirlwind. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, all the white nation are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The 150 million Christians in the United States were high pressured by the Christian clergy to give their unqualified support to the Zionist program to repatriate to their homeland in Palestine.
Right. Yeah, yeah. By the way, you know, if anybody calls you a conspiracy theorist as a pejorative comment, you can answer that person by saying, "Did you know that God is a conspiracy theorist?" Second Samuel 15:12, and the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. Second Kings 12:20, and his servants arose and made a conspiracy. Second Kings 14:19. Now they made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem. And as I like this one from Jeremiah, and Yahweh said unto me, a conspiracy is found among the men of Judah. And among the inhabitants of Jerusalem, rather, and I'll just one more, Ezekiel 22:25, there is a conspiracy of her prophets in the midst thereof, like a roaring lion, ravening the prey. They have devoured souls. They have taken the treasure and precious things. They have made her many widows in the midst thereof. Yahweh is a conspiracy theorist. Run that by a few Christians. Why don't you? Back to you.
Yeah. And isn't also I thought about some, yeah, you have in Psalms, it is Psalms 83, where is it, where it said that it is a conspiracy against his people.
that doesn't come up. There might be an alternative word, like confederation. They might use it. Let me know. Psalm 183. Let me look it up.
Maybe not 83. This is the psalm where we ask for. Now I have to look it up because now I.
Yeah. There's alternative words for conspiracy in scripture as well. They are confederate against us. That's another word. Confederate against us. Okay. So Yahweh is a conspiracy theorist, folks. And if anybody accuses you of being a conspiracy, especially if that person is a Christian, then you can just quote those passages. And if you want, let me just, the last one.
Psalms 83. Yeah. Take it, you, okay. And then I take Psalms 83.
Okay. So you want to read it? You have it in
front
of
you? I can read. I have it in front of me.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, they craftily plot against your people and conspire against your treasured ones.
Wow. Conspire. Okay. Yeah. So that's the verb. Okay. That's a good one. All right. So, if somebody calls you a conspiracy theorist, just quote the Bible. That person would, really? That's in the Bible? It sure is. All right. Good job. Thank you. All right.
Okay, I can continue. Would you want to read Isaiah?
Isaiah. Oh, no. I was looking for something else. But go ahead. Yeah, just please continue.
Okay. The Jews in Eastern Europe who were descendants of the Khazars, Christians were exhorted by the Christian clergy to regard the Jews in Eastern Europe as God's chosen people and Palestine as their promised land. But they knew better all the time. It was a chase of cupidity, not stupidity. Yeah. You can be sure.
Okay, cupidity is when somebody fools you tongue-in-cheek, right? They're lying, but you don't know it. They're cheating, but you don't know it. Okay? That's cupidity.
As a direct result of the activities of the male prostitutes on behalf of the Zionist program, and contrary to all international law, to justice, and to equity, anything to the contrary, notwithstanding, the 150 million Christians in the United States, with few exceptions, demanded that the Congress of the United States use the prestige and the power of this nation, diplomatic, economic, and military, to guarantee the successful outcome of the Zionist program for the conquest of Palestine. This was done, and the Zionists conquered Palestine. We are responsible.
Yes, I don't agree that the people demanded it. That was done behind the scenes by Jewish conspirators. Yes, there's a Jewish conspiracy against the white race folks. And they influenced our legislators to promote this pro-Israel nonsense. The people never voted for this. It's not democratically instituted by stealth and deception. Just like Nakash in the garden. Okay, back to you, Michael.
It is a well-established and undeniable historic fact that the active participations of the United States in the conquest of Palestine on behalf of the Zionists was the factor responsible for the conquest of Palestine by the Zionists. Without the active participations of the United States on behalf of the Zionists, it is certain that the Zionists would never have attempted the conquest of Palestine by force of arms. Palestine today would be an independent sovereign country under a form of government established by self-determination of the lawful and legal Palestinians. This was aborted by the payment of countless millions of dollars to Christians male prostitutes by Zionists on a scale difficult to the uninitiated to even imagine. With your kind permission, anticipated, I beg to respectfully and sincerely now submit to you here my comments on several passages in your latest article with appeared in the September issue of the APG Bulletin under the headline News and Views of Jews. Deep down in my heart, my dear Dr. Goldstein, I truly feel that I can make a modest contribution toward the big success. I wish you in the valuable work you are attempting under such discouraging handicaps. My reactions to what you state in your article may prove helpful to you. My comments here were conceived in that spirit. May I suggest that you favor them with your consideration accordingly? I feel that you may be so close to the trees that you cannot see the forest in its true perspective. You may find a genuinely sincere outsider's point of view helpful to you in orienting your yesterday's attitudes to today's realities and to tomorrow's seemingly certain probabilities. I believe you will. You realize, my dear Dr. Goldstein, that all laws of nature are irrevocable. Laws of nature can neither be amended, suspended, or repealed, regardless how you feel about them. One of these laws of nature is fundamentally the basic reason why Jews became Catholics. Yeah, but I don't buy that, maybe. The subtle in your article, which attracted my attention, the law of nature to which I refer, is the law that to every action there is an equal and opposite reaction. In my respectful opinion, that law of nature is the alpha and omega of all questions as to why Jews became Catholics. In your article, you make this mystery sound very complicated. However, it really is very simple. The Jews who became Catholics today are subconsciously reacting to the law of nature. The conversion to Catholicism of the so-called Jews is the equal and opposite reaction of the law of nature. Their conversion is a reaction, not an action. Can you any longer doubt that after reading these facts, Catholicism has proven itself spiritually the equal and opposite reaction of the religious worship practiced today under the name Judaism and prior to the name under the names Talmudism and Phariseeism? What is spiritually conspicuous in Catholicism is conspicuous by its absence in so-called Judaism. What is spiritually conspicuous is so-called Judaism. So conspicuous by its absence in Catholicism, thank God. Anything which may be said by anyone to the contrary notwithstanding, Catholicism and so-called Judaism are the opposite extremes of the spiritual spectrum. Why Jews became Catholics and the penalties for doing so. Our subconscious mind never sleeps. It remains awake all the while the conscious mind is asleep. This subconscious mind of so-called or self-styled Jews is why Jews became Catholics. The more spiritually sensitive subconscious mind of the so-called or self-styled Jews for 2,000 years has been seeking a spiritual secure beachhead as a refuge from the terror of the Talmud. After a lifetime breaching the atmosphere of the Talmud, so-called or self-styled Jews found Catholicism, a wholesome and refreshing change of spiritual climate. They could not resist the spiritual force of the equal and opposite reaction, which attracted them to Catholicism. Catholicism supplied a sacred sanctuary for the more spiritual, sensitive, subconscious mind of the so-called or self-styled Jews, seeking security in the escape from the Talmud. Before sailing into the safe port of Catholicism, the subconscious mind of the more spiritually sensitive Jews would embark upon that voyage of their more courageous co-religionist, but for one reason. They fear reprisals by their co-religionist. In okay, your article, you mention just a few of the many penalties imposed by reactionary, so-called or self-styled Jews upon their co-religionist who became converts to Catholicism. Conversion to Catholicism has ever deprived many former so-called or self-styled Jews from earning their living. Many families face starvation for that reason. A convert to Catholicism must be ready and willing to suffer the economic, social, and political hardship his former co-religionist will make him pay as the price of the spiritual wealth he will acquire with conversion to Catholicism. Investigation by you will convince you that the so-called self-styled Jews never turned spiritually to Catholicism because such was the Jewish religion, because such is the Catholic religion. As you state in your article, a so-called or self-styled Jew might question the wisdom of conversion from the original to a copy of the original, in so much as so-called Judaism is modern name for Talmudism, and Talmudism is a name given to the ancient practice of Phariseeism. How can you reconcile what you state that such was the Jewish religion, such is the Catholic religion? Several Jews who were recently converted to Catholicism are my personal friends. Not one of those whom I asked became a Catholic because they felt the Catholic Church is the Jewish Church glorified. As you state in your article, what Jewish Church, they ask me, I am unable to answer. What Jewish Church, I ask? Phariseeism, Talmudism. Surely you would not venture the opinion that the Catholic Church is Phariseeism or Talmudism, now glorified as Catholicism, would you? And from the editorial, the more the Edomite, Canaanite, Khazarian, Ashkenazi Jews convert to Catholicism, the more Catholicism becomes Talmudic. Because of their genetic nature, Edomite, Canaanite cannot receive the Holy Spirit of God and embrace the Bible as absolute truth. The Talmud, though oppressive in its legality and ritual, is appallingly lax in moral precepts and thus more suited to the Jewish nature and proselytism. The Church, the Catholic Church, and modern Protestant denominations have thus been corrupted by Jews who are natural-born revolutionaries and have our white nations, and in particular our former constitutional republic, which is now a socialist communist slave state with a Babylonian-style usurious money system termed a democracy ruled over by Jews. Ed, it must be quite apparent to you now that Jews who become converts to Catholicism do not believe that the Catholic Church, as you state in your article, is the church of Jewish converts and their descendants. They do not regard Jesus as a convert to the Catholic Church. You include Jesus as a convert to the Catholic Church in your article. In your article, you state, first came Christ, then Jews of Jews. I never heard that designation before. Is it original? Nor will converted Jews concur at all with then came the apostles, all Jews. As you also state in your article, there is unquestionably too big an area of disagreement here to disregard the views of those who have become converts to Catholicism, nor can these converts to Catholicism be made to believe it as truth. Then came the thousands of the first members of the Catholic Church who were Jews, as you state in your article on the discussion here. My dear Mr. Goldstein, as a former so-called self-styled Jews for almost half your life, when you became a convert to Catholicism, did you do so for the reasons you state in your article? Why Jesus
become Jews,
Catholics?
Why Jews become
they
Catholics.
Would be difficult for me to believe in spite of the future statement you make in your articles. In fact, there would not have been a Catholic Church were it not for the Jews. The statement appears incredible in view of incontestable facts, but these facts may not have been available to you when you made it. If Jews believed what you state in your article, they would undoubtedly prefer to stay put spiritually in their Jewish church, by which you mean, no doubt, so-called Judaism. They would query why Catholics expected them to leave their Jewish church to enter the Catholic Church. It might appear more logical to expect Catholics to return to the renewal of the Catholic Church, the Jewish Church, or so-called Judaism. On the basis of what you state, that would not be inconsistent. You take away my breath when your father states Catholicism would not exist were it not for Judaism. That leaves very little for me to say after writing these 62 pages of facts and comments. In a certain sense, there is certain sense to what you state. If you feel that the existence of so-called Judaism in the time of Jesus and since then created a necessity for the existence of Catholicism, but in no sense can the Catholic Church be adjusted to be the projection of Pharisaism, Talmudism, or so-called Judaism, though it is morphing into just that because of Jewish infiltration. Editor, we should get together in person to go into this matter more fully. I hope you will extend that privilege to me in that not more distant future. In close this letter, I sincerely request that you bear in mind while reading this letter, Galatians 4:16, am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth? And to this I add, I hope not. I hope that we shall continue to be very best of friends if the Christian faith is to be rescued from its dedicated enemies. We must all join hands and form a human lifeline. We must pull together, not in different directions. We must bury the hatchet, but not in each other's heads. Looking forward, pleasant anticipations to the delight of meeting with you in person whenever you find it convenient and agreeable for yourself, and awaiting your early reply, for which I take this opportunity to thank you in advance, and you will best wishes for your continued good health and success. Please believe me to be, most respectfully and very sincerely, Benjamin H. Friedman.
Okay, Michael, can you hear me?
Oh, now I hear. Oh, you fell out.
Yeah, my hotspot overheated and it stopped working. But I'm so glad you're able to continue without me. So masterful job. Very good. Okay, so we're very near the end of our time slot anyway, but let's just tell people that next week we will start doing the Elizabeth Dilling document. Okay. The plot against Christianity. I have the actual print book with that title. And what is the title that has been given to it lately?
Jewish religion is influenced today.
its influence today. So Elizabeth Dilling was a Chicagoan who went to the Soviet Union and as a tourist, and she realized how evil the Soviet Union was, even though there was a lot of pro-Soviet propaganda coming from Jews in America, especially the New York Times, we should call it the Jew York Times, which was promoting the Soviet Union as an agricultural paradise. Can you believe it? This is what the New York Times was saying about the Soviet Union in those days. So she went to that paradise and checked it out, and she discovered the Talmud. Okay, folks. All right. So good show. We will be back with you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you. Goodbye, all.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Beep.